Welcome to Raised in Wisco, the show where we tell you how to get outside in the great state of Wisconsin and do stuff. This week, we're revisiting some of our favorite moments from the past few months. Your hosts, Joel Clayfish and Danielle Fairman, my goodness, they have talked to some incredible people and had incredible experiences, and we are going to be looking back at some of those great moments. I'm the producer of this show, Jess P.S., and I'll be reminding you of where each of these episodes came from. Remember, you can always check out any episode that you want to revisit or one that maybe you missed at civicmedia.us or on Spotify or Apple Podcasts just by searching for Raised in Wisco. First up, we're going back to November 23rd when the Foul Life team was in town. Hear from Tuffy Stone, Denny Reed, Cody Salmon, and Chad Belding, hosts of the national Foul Life TV series.
Tuffy Stone, you won the Jack Daniels three times. You're the six-time world champion pitmaster. I tell everybody, Raised in Wisco, at the end of the day, is about cooking. It's a cooking show because we always end up talking about food. You are the guru. You are the master. Your nickname is The Professor. Talk to me about barbecue.
I'm just so glad that this is radio and not television because I'm really blushing over here. My grandfather beat my head in humility, so you've embarrassed me.
Tuffy, you are very clearly a humble man. Barbecue is really this kind of fundamental, basic way of cooking that I think is natural and innate in all of us. How did you, as a hunter, as a pitmaster, as a barbecue man, how does that all wrap itself together?
You know, I just thought back to one of my first culinary experiences. I was probably about, I don't know, 15, 16 years old, and I cooked my first version of surf and turf, and it was squirrel.
That
it was squirrel.
Like squirrel brain or situation?
No, they look like rats in the skillet. But anyways,
but you had a rat in the skillet.
It was a squirrel, but, and some brook trout that I had caught myself. So that was my. But you know, we were on the drive over here for the show. We were talking, and Chad was asking, "Is there a lot of commonality with barbecuers in the same way when we get together as hunters and people that fish?" And I think it's the exact same thing. There's this camaraderie that comes along with getting out in the woods and going hunting, or, you know, getting out on the boat and going fishing, or lighting up the barbecue pit and cooking some meat.
Tuffy, I don't mean to totally put the pressure on, but I kind of do.
Pressure's on.
Talk to us about a cooking segment.
Okay, so you always do a recipe, but I want to really talk about a process or a method, because we can apply this to a lot of different foods that we want to cook. Some of my guiding lights, things that are really important to me when I'm cooking barbecue or grilling, and I started off in a French kitchen getting yelled at by Chef Alain, and he had a term, it's a French term called mise en place, and basically it's to be organized, to have all your tools in the right place. I don't care if we're in the field hunting or we're fishing or we're in the kitchen cooking, being organized is going to make that process a lot more enjoyable. So when I get outside and I'm grilling or I'm barbecuing or I'm smoking, first of all, I'm going to start with the best meat that I can afford. I'm looking for well-marbled meat. These meats are going to, when it's well-marbled and you have that good intramuscular fat, it's going to render out and it's going to make for a nice juicy bite. When it comes to seasoning, fresh rubs, I want, you know, if I'm going to spend 4 hours babysitting a rack of ribs, I want fresh ground black pepper. I want fragrant spices. I want to put the right amount of seasoning. The bigger the cut of meat, the more rub I put on there. The thinner the cut, the less. I'm going to have a clean pit. I'm going to have a clean grill. I do not subscribe to the flavors from the previous cook. Sharp knives, good wood, good charcoal, and then doneness. I am going to hit the perfect texture every time. If it's a steak, I'm going to get it to where it's a nice medium rare for me. If you like it cooked more, cook it more. Resting these meats is going to allow this meat to cool down and for that juice to stay in there and make for a better bite. When it comes to saucing, always cook your meat till it's tender and done, and then sauce at the end. Barbecue sauces have sugars in them, and if it get too hot, they'll burn on you.
Wow. I think you just
hot dog.
I want you to, Danielle, it's
Hi.
All right.
Sorry.
It's
gonna, what
are we talking about over here?
It's going to be all right, Danielle. Producer Jess is just shaking her head.
Exciting.
I just want to point that out.
It is dinner time.
It is, and it is not coincidence that Tuffy Stone's nickname is The Professor, because you literally have a poetic way to describe things. When you described the way to cook, I followed that as a person who's not experienced in smoking and barbecue. Yeah,
he
unbelievably. We've got an MMA UFC fighter taking notes. Tuffy Stone, and I don't blame him. When you explain it that way, honestly, everything you said makes total and utter sense. So I get to hunt with a guy who has the social media, has invented a social media platform that you can share all of your recipes, your outdoor adventures.
How do I not know about this?
Danielle. It's raised called Camo in Space.
Right now.
And the inventor of it, Denny Reed, not only is he a serious hunter, he's like a gigantic watermelon farmer.
Watermelon?
In
Maryland.
And here's something that I don't think a lot of people, you're from Maryland.
From the Eastern Shore.
He's from the East Coast, but he's got a Southern accent, and he told me something I never knew. He lives in Maryland, south of the Mason-Dixon line.
Oh, that's nice.
Yeah.
We're from the South.
Isn't that crazy? And you're a watermelon farmer.
Yeah. Well, so, just to refresh, a lot of people think of Baltimore and Washington when they think of Maryland. We're on the Eastern Shore between the ocean and the bay, so it's... If you got dropped in Illinois, you wouldn't know no difference. I mean, it's all farm and farm country, good Southern people.
Yeah, it's fantastic. What I want to know, though, you as a farmer, so farmers procure the land. They are the ones who supply the food source for America. You're a big farmer. You've got hundreds of acres of farm.
5,000.
5,000 acres.
How many watermelons?
800 acres of watermelons. We usually ship around 1,000 tractor trailer loads in 60 days every year between July 15th and September 15th.
That's incredible. Huh. How did that marry with your passion and your love for hunting?
Well, because I grew up on a farm, and the greatest thing we could do was be able to get to go hunting, especially in the afternoons after school or in the fall when we got done harvest. I mean, it was just the most exciting time, and when rifle season was coming. And then we, you know, like goose and duck hunting, and that was the birthplace of waterfowl hunting is on the Eastern Shore. It's always been famous for duck and goose hunting out there.
Without a second more, let's understand what Camo Space is. How'd you come up with it? What is it, and what's its purpose?
I mean, it's very basic social media for the outdoors. If you love hunting, fishing, and outdoors, it's going to be camping, biking, hiking, whatever. So many times in the last 4 or 5 years, people have been censored. Something as simple as a father taking their son, killing a deer, and it gets taken off for sensitive content. We don't think that's sensitive content. I'm in control of it, so it'll never be banned or censored for putting up the lifestyle that we love. I originally had the ideas because there is a lot of hunting shows like Chad's got himself, but not everybody can have a hunting show. But everybody's going to take a picture or a video while they're hunting. So it's a place you can post this yourself without, you know, you might not ever find yourself on national TV, but it's a place you can post and share it with your friends.
The common thread here is Chad Belding. Chad, you and I have known each other now for going on 4 years. I'd like to think that it's become it's blossomed into a very,
blossomed.
Very wonderful
very
friendship.
Very manly word.
But I want to know what your secret is. I want to understand why I am now sitting next to a UFC fighter, a pit master, the inventor of a massive social media platform.
That's a very
How
good
does
question.
It happen that we come together and are at this moment in history, at this time and place, together?
I think it comes down to that everybody's just like we are. You could be a celebrity, you know, like these guys are. I walk into a UFC fight with this guy right here, and when you walk in through the tunnel at the T-Mobile Arena, he cannot go to his seat because he's badgered for nonstop pictures, selfies, autographs, and he's just Cody to me, but he's literally building a legacy as a fighter because he's real. And I think that realism and being real is what got us here. I think that people caught on to what we were doing. We wanted to shed light on what it meant to, you know, showcase what America had to offer, or Canada had to offer in the outdoors. And like I said, with Bandit, these walks of life, they all enjoy the outdoors. It's the common denominator. It's not me. It's not anybody that's done it as a celebrity. It's Mother Nature. When mallard ducks are doing what mallard ducks do in the sunshine, they make everybody drop to their knees. And you could be the biggest singer in the world. That's hunting with Zach Brown. He sells out Fenway Park, 50,000 people. But when he's in Arkansas putting on waders, he cannot wait to get under a tree and kick the water and watch a dog do what a dog does and watch those mallard ducks. And I really think that that's what it came down to, is I got a platform that I was able to showcase what we really love. And I was able to, you know, be introduced to these guys. And when they saw that we did it right, or they felt that we did it right and did it real, they respected what we did. And obviously we respected what they do. I would never go into the octagon with Cody Stamann and fight him. I'll go train with him. I'll play pickleball against him. But
pickleball?
Yeah,
that's
I love
the
pickleball.
Theme?
I'm addicted. And he got me into pickleball. So all
okay, that's just so weird.
You could talk about pickleball till we're blue in the face, but the bottom line is this: there is a mutual respect, and we all respect God, the man upstairs, Mother Nature, and what they provide to us on a daily basis. We are so blessed to do this, and it doesn't matter how famous you are. Ducks and a deer and a turkey will humble you in a heartbeat
that's
if you already
fact.
Don't have humility. So Cody's one of the most humble human beings I've ever met. And when you watch him train and what he looks like going into the octagon and his success in the octagon in the UFC, he's just an unbelievable human being. And I'm proud to call him a friend.
Cody Stamen, I want to get into what you like to hunt and what you brought, you know, what the commonality is between your lifestyle and the hunting lifestyle, because I think to have a UFC fighter, UFC fighting is something that is very raw. It's a very visceral sport. Mm-hmm. It is smash mouth. I mean, and I think that's one of the things we like about Green Bay football, the traditions of Lombardi, Bart Starr, Brett Favre. I mean, we are kind of a smash mouth football club, but I have been visiting with you just in the few short hours I've even met you. You are a very humble, kind, kind of almost soft-spoken, but very intelligent person. And what I'm curious to know is how your personality and persona is able to turn into what it does inside of an octagon or a ring, where the actual winner of this bout is who can physically, literally physically dominate the other person. Is that tough as a person?
I think a lot of people have a common misconception of how a fighter is going to act outside of the ring. They think they're aggressive. They think, honestly, I think a lot of people assume that we're all dumb. Hmm. I mean, I graduated college in 3 years. I might be an anomaly in fighting, but I think that fighting humbles you in a way that really nothing else in life can, because you're being, I mean, if I have a bad day at the office, it happens in front of my family, it happens in front of everyone who knows me. It's a horrible experience, and it humbles you in a way that life can't. You know, if you have a bad day at the office, it's probably between you and a few other employees or people that work under you, you know. But for me, it's, I do this in front of everyone I've ever met. So it humbles you in a way that really nothing else can. So, I mean, it's tough to be a proud and arrogant person. Obviously, I think a lot of people have like a persona that they put on when the camera gets on them. I'm not one of those people. I don't believe in it. I think being authentic is always the best way to be, on or off camera. But I think you would be really surprised at how kind and gentle MMA fighters are. Really, I mean, some of the best human beings I've met in my entire life were fighters.
That episode was from November 23rd, titled The Great Uniter. Find it at civicmedia.us on Spotify and Apple Podcasts. Come back with us on Raised in Wisco, your civic media show for everything to do in the great outdoors of Wisconsin. Your show on all the great things you can do in the outdoors of Wisconsin. I'm the producer of this show, Jess P.S. From all of us here at Raised in Wisco, myself and your hosts, Joel Clayfish and Danielle Fairman, we wish you a very, very happy holiday season. We're going back now to October 26th for our episode on the Gold Star Shoot with Matt Johnson and Jeremy Walker.
Matt Johnson and Jeremy Walker, they have the Gold Star Shoot. Matt is a veteran of the Marine Corps. Thank you for your service. But your service, Matt, did not end when you came back. You said, I need to do something for the veterans. How did you come up with the Gold Star Shoot, and what is it?
So it was one of my buddies that actually started this, a Navy vet, and he ended up moving. So he asked me if I wanted to take it over because, you know, like you said, my mission wasn't over. You know, we lost a lot of guys in my first tour, a couple guys in my second tour, and you know, a lot of guys stateside because of the demons and everything else. So we decided to create this, take this match that's it's a six-stage pistol shoot. We run it in iron sights, optics, and a PCC, which is a pistol caliber carbine. Six stages is hosted at Schultz Resort Rod and Gun Club in Muskego.
Muskego, Wisconsin.
Wisconsin. And that's, I got next to me right here, the guy that makes everything happen for me, because I can make cool stages look really cool on paper, but he's the guy behind everything, making sure that I'm actually doing it right.
So it says that it's an outlaw pistol match.
Yep.
I need more information about that because I'm only envisioning.
That's like, exactly what.
Wild West,
okay,
like right
just
the
for
middle.
The record, Danielle's making finger guns, right? Like she's like
right from my hips.
It's actually quite a bit like that.
Is it?
Yeah, I'm gonna have Matt explain what an outlaw pistol match is. And I, you know what? explain. Can we're trying envisioned. To do like the tumbleweed thing?
I can't whistle.
Womp womp womp. Is that
exactly.
what you're doing?
Exactly.
Okay. So number one, how did you come up with it? Can people participate who are not shooters?
Absolutely.
Can they come? How do you get to be a part of it? How do you go to it? And how do you support the veterans? Let's say if you're not a shooter, and how do you do it if you are?
Right. So what is Outlaw Pistol? It's again six stages, and all the stages are different. There's an all steel stage that we set up that it's color coordinated. So there might be different color boxes, and you can only shoot a certain color steel from a certain box. Most of the other stages are set up. There's targets, and it's best 2 hits per paper. Don't shoot the white paper, and don't shoot the black papers. And that's literally all it is. And it's movement.
Does someone count down? And then you draw? Out of a holster on
your
side?
It'll tell you. It'll depend on the stage. There might be a stage where your pistol starts on a barrel unloaded, and you start on the opposite side, so you have to run pick up your magazines off your barrels as you go. And there's certain stages that, you start with your pistol fully loaded in your holster and everything else. We did a stage this year that we actually shot an AR-15, a shotgun, and your personal pistol or whatever you have. And that was, prop guns, and people love that.
So is this like a BYOG, bring your own gun?
Bring your own gun, bring your own ammo.
Or can I use someone else's?
I mean, if you don't have one, we know enough people that have enough setups and everything else that we can get you going. And again, we have people that are 12 years old shooting this, and we have people that are 80 years old shooting this.
Oh, that's wonderful.
This is for everyone. We've had people that have, I think this year we had about 12 people out of 123 that never shot a match before in their life, but they just wanted to come out and support, and that's what we're here for. I mean, mm-hmm. we want everyone. We want everyone from all climes and all places to come out and enjoy this match. We usually post it up, and it's on an app called Practice Score. We also are on Instagram at WI Gold Star Shoot that we can do that. But everything's on Practice Score. That's how you sign up for your squatting and payments up front. And last year, everyone had a goodie bag.
Oh, that's
everyone
awesome.
Loves
swag.
Goodie
Everybody
bag.
Loves yeah. swag. I love swag.
Yes.
So here's a question. This is going to come up in August. If I'm someone who's maybe interested in learning this or starting out, but has no idea how to do it, how do I do that? This show is about experts, but it's also about those who are curious or want to see if it's something they might like. How do I go about doing that if I say, I would like to try this or learn about it? How do I do that? Jeremy, tell me how somebody can start if they don't understand how to do this or they'd like to try it.
So at Schultz Gun Club, we host what's called Pistol League on Tuesday nights. That's the second week of May through the second week of August. Anybody and everybody can come out if you want to learn how to action shoot. We have equipment. We have different pistols. We shoot anything from 22 through 45.
So my question to both of you is, do you have these events and you have people who show up, men or women, who are kind of maybe anti-firearm at first, or at least agnostic about firearms, and by the end of it, they have a completely different understanding of what it is, and they end up becoming interested? Because what I've found about hunting is those who are often anti or agnostic about it at first, when they are exposed to it under the right circumstances, and that's up to us as hunters and shooters, they fully change.
Every time. I get people that'll show up, and they're like, no, I can't do it. We'll work through it. Baby steps. You work them up in calibers.
That's awesome.
They go through everything. The women shoots, we do archery, we do trap.
That sounds fantastic. So make sure, if you're curious about this, contact somebody. Contact us at Raised in Wisco. We'll put you in touch with the right people. But I want to talk a little bit about some of the difficulty that there is in returning from a wartime situation. And one of the reasons that Matt and Jeremy started the Gold Star Shoot and care about veterans and veterans' mental health. Several years ago, I was the lead author of a bill called the Green Alert Bill, which allowed the Amber Alert system to put missing at-risk veterans on the Amber Alert system. And someone, the average person might think, missing at-risk veterans, why is that a separate category? But the reality is that the mental health issues, suicide rates, PTSD, and the things that those who fight for the United States, soldiers, Marines, airmen, when they come back, they have experienced something that those of us living here cannot understand. So I want to ask you, as a Marine who returned from a wartime situation, how tough is it? And how tough is it that those of us who are assimilated in this society don't understand what you're going through when you come back?
It's really tough. I was in Iraq in 06, back in 08, and then I deployed again in 2010. The whole time you're on high alert. I mean, you have your brothers that's got your back, but you don't know when your time's going to come. I mean, you don't know if you're going to wake up the next day. And when you first hit stateside and those wheels hit the ground, it is the craziest feeling ever. It's the best feeling, but then you're alone. And that's where a lot of the outdoors stuff and a lot of people find the outdoors. It's a hard feeling, and there's nothing you can compare to it. You just want to go back. I mean, I got out in 06.
You literally want to go back into the wartime situation.
100%. I got out after my first deployment in 06, and I raised my hand and volunteered to go back in 08.
Wow.
It's that hard to come back.
It is.
Is the toughest part the fact that people, those folks here don't understand?
It's an adrenaline rush the whole time over there. And it's just being with your brothers and sisters and everything over there. Like you build up such a big camaraderie and everything else with everyone around you. And it's every day is something different.
What can we stateside, what can we do better when those folks who are in wartime scenarios? I mean, I can't imagine it. We can watch the movies, and the movies are going to give us maybe a smidgen of understanding, but not much. What can we do better to understand that when someone who thinks or wonders whether their life is going to end second to second comes back here in a society where we take so many things for granted and we love, you know, we say first world problems, and we, I believe, sometimes are not equipped to accept or welcome folks back because we don't understand it. How can we understand that better?
It's going to be hard. Veterans, we're all stubborn. We're super stubborn. And I haven't met one that isn't stubborn. It's trying to relate, and it's almost hard to relate because, you know, I have a hard time talking to a lot of people because it's like, you weren't there. You don't know what I'm talking about. But that's why in the shooting sports and everything else and being outdoors and fishing and getting behind a rod and a reel and getting away from the booze, honestly, it's finding that niche. And not everyone's niche is the same, what you want to come back and what you want to do. Some people are shooting. Some people are underwater basket weaving.
What?
Seriously.
Seriously, underwater basket weaving. It's something you can do in the great outdoors of Wisconsin. I'm the producer of this show, Jess P.S. Come back with us on Raised in Wisco as we continue to revisit some of our favorite moments from the past few months. With my boots on. In Wisco. I'm the producer of this show, Jess P.S. Your hosts, Joel Clayfish and Danielle Fairman, send their wishes for you to have the happiest holidays possible. In this episode, we've been taking a look back at some of our favorite moments. Now, that could not be complete without our Gator Gabbing episode from December 14th. You guys, Joel, Danielle, our frequent co-host, Ellie Lawton-Smoller, and Jess Thielen, one of their friends, all went down to Florida to gator and hog hunt. Danielle had one of her most successful hunts ever. Let's listen.
We took a road trip down to Florida.
Air trip.
We took an airplane flying on a jet plane to Florida. We went to Yeehaw Junction, Florida, where we hunted alligators and hogs. And Danielle had the experience of a lifetime sitting in a tree in the palmettos in the Florida swamp. Was it what you expected?
Some of it was. It was a trailer in the middle of nowhere in a field with the woods and hearing the palmetto bugs, crickets, and what I call the grandpa's beard, but what it's just Spanish moss. And then that was much about it. Hogs everywhere, shooting guns out of a tree stand. Yes, I expected that. But I did not actually think it was going to be in the dead of night.
Ooh, yeah.
I thought it was going to be twilight, and that was it. And we would come back around maybe 10 o'clock, but the hogs did not come on camera until about 9 to 11 o'clock. And
right.
That is when my thoughts go crazy. I have
really?
Seen so many horror movies.
Really? It is. Okay. I want to set the scene. As the sun, first of all, we're on a kind of a plateau on the property. All right. There's a pasture at the top, like a 10 acre pasture. Then it drops down, which is very strange because there's not a lot of topography in Florida. Everything's pretty flat. I mean, it's an old giant marsh that they built, brought in sand, more sand, and built houses on there. But the property we hunted literally has, it's topographical. And so it goes down.
down a hill to a river that runs through the palmettos. And palmettos, if you can think of them, are like miniature palm trees all over the place. And you can't see when you wade through them, you can't see from your knee to your foot. Mm-hmm. So you got to watch where you're stepping because there are rattlesnakes and other kinds of snakes and critters and bugs. And I mean, it's Florida. I don't know how people live in Florida with all the critters that can kill you there. I'm telling you.
Oh, the wolf spiders. They were definitely everywhere.
They were out. Ooh, we saw a lot of wolf spiders. Mm-hmm. But I have to tell you what's so crazy about Florida to me in the palmettos, when you're in the thick of it, and we say woods up here, it's not really woods there. They call it in the palmettos because it's palm trees. There are cypresses. There
that
are
was so beautiful,
evergreens.
Yeah.
So when that sun is setting and you're in your stand or in your blind and the sun's setting, it is the most picturesque, beautiful sunsets ever. You know, you see the shadows of the palm trees and everything's pristine and picturesque. Then it gets pitch black.
Mm-hmm. It was a different type of dark down there.
It's really
the moon did come out and light up everything, black. But I'm used to the oak tree leaves and just seeing the trees, the shadows of the trees by my stand up here in Wisconsin. But seeing the Spanish moss shadows and then the palmetto shadows and everything, it was completely different. My eyes kept playing tricks on me.
Also the noises.
Oh,
the
yes.
And sitting in the woods by us in pitch black, you know, coyote hunting and stuff. The sounds are so much different.
It is. Well, and then when you see something and you do not have the obviously it's dark, you cannot actually see it. So you have to actually put up your night vision scope and look around to try to find what is making this noise.
Mm-hmm.
And these hogs, you couldn't find them because it was just, they were running through the thick of the palmettos.
Oh, yeah. The sounds, I want to talk about when your mind starts to play tricks on you, you start hearing things and you're wondering if the crackling you're hearing is a snake coming up the tree that you're in. Mm. Danielle sat fully exposed in a tree stand, and she sat for hours on end. And what was the rule we said about a wild hog? So wild hogs smell 7 times better than a white-tailed deer. That's why they can find truffles under the ground, right? And they will literally smell everybody. You can't do anything for them not to smell. They know you're there. It's just a matter of whether you can outlive their desire to eat, to come to corn
their
and
stomach,
eat, right?
Yep.
Their stomach. Mm-hmm. So we did talk about the rule of if you can outlast their stomach, you're going to be a successful hog hunter. So when it's quiet, you'll hear these little snorts every once in a while or grunts. You know they're pigs. You know they're wild hogs.
Oh, absolutely.
And you know what? I always tell people a wild hog will kill you far before an alligator will.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, those things are just, they can be really nasty critters. So Danielle, I was blown away. We gave up.
Yeah.
That was, you killed your hog the night we gave up.
Yeah, I actually wanted to say, you know, you were talking about outlasting the hog's, you know, hunger and stomach. Well, Joel, Jessica, and I, our stomachs gave up and we went to get something to eat and Danielle chose to stay in the stand.
Oh my gosh, that's right. That's right. Actually, our stomachs did not. Danielle's stomach outlasted ours.
Yeah, exactly.
Which is really bizarre. Always eating.
I got antsy, and sure enough, Danielle called and said she shot it.
Oh, yeah,
they
came walking right in, and I definitely heard.
Take us through what you saw and what you heard when you finally shot.
Oh, my goodness. So it was after a couple coyotes have run away. I could hear them. That's when I texted you. I'm like, am I able to shoot coyotes as well? Because they were getting close.
Yeah.
But you guys got out and you started texting me. And the rule of the thing was if you need to have an okay from everybody to get out of your stand, because again, we don't know where we are.
Right.
So to be safe and let us know if we're pushing something.
Yeah.
Hey, I'm going to be leaving a stand.
Well, because
we need
40
from
acres
everybody.
Is a big enough property, but you still don't want to be shooting across it. You can still, a bullet will go across it. You want to make sure no one's walking when you don't know, and there's stands on properties. We were utmost, I mean, Ellie Mae is, you know, an instructor, a firearm safety
mentor.
So, I mean, that's really important. All right. So take us through, Danielle.
Yeah. And then all of a sudden I get about 20 messages coming through. My phone's on vibrate. I'm like, okay, something happened. Maybe someone shot and I didn't hear anything.
Mm-hmm.
And then I look at my phone and I hear just the loudest snorts I've ever heard.
Could you impersonate those for us, Danielle?
You would be really.
Let's hear it.
and then they ran away. And then the greatest thing happened, coming from the direction of Jess's stand, was a bunch of rustling going through the palmettos. And you could hear them. It's like walking on crinkled up paper. Like they were so loud.
Hogs are loud.
But
they don't care.
Not one bit. And I could not for the life of me find where these things were.
In the scope.
In the scope.
In the scope.
So I hear
night vision scope, which is very hard to hunt in because it's a very limited view of what you can see.
And so I'm searching, looking through all the brush or whatever you want to call it, and I keep hearing them. So I put the night vision down and I'm listening. Okay, mm-hmm. Oh, they're to the left more. All right, put it up. Let's go to the left more. But I'm looking up and down and I see a bunny, then I see a raccoon, and then just everything else. I'm like, I know you are here. Mm-hmm. And I do not want to move so fast because I'm thinking they can hear me squeak in the tree stand
sure,
or something.
Sure. They listen really well. They can't see for junk, but they can smell.
Oh, and my heart was beating so fast.
I imagine.
And next thing I know, here is a line of like six or seven. I'm coming through. I'm like, oh, okay. Joel said behind the ear, shoot them behind the ear. And they're all facing different ways. And,
and they never stop moving. No. They do not. They're not like deer. They do not stop moving.
And then
moving.
There's these bogs. So the bogs, it was just like big,
yeah,
just
palmetto
big bogs.
Big palmetto
and
bogs.
They're bobbing and weaving through. I'm like, oh, there they are. And I'm trying to get a good actual shot. And then they finally stop. And then I shoot. Behind the ear.
It was a great shot, Danielle.
It was a great shot.
Danielle, you got it. And you got it.
Wow, I get shivers just listening back to that. This is Jess P.S., the producer of Raised in Wisco, where you're listening to some of our best moments from the past few months. Now, Danielle had incredible success with her hog, but how did she do with a gator?
I want to talk about a phenomenon that happens when you go to Florida and you hunt hogs and gators. What we've talked about so far all happened on the first day we got there.
The first day slash week.
It is so bizarre.
It was a 4-week vacation.
Each day was a week.
It feels like one day is like 4 or 5 days. And it seemed, I mean, this was before we ever even went gator hunting the next day. So we had to headed down the next morning very early and drove an hour and a half down to Indrio Road, which is south of Vero in Fort Pierce, Florida.
Fort Pierce, yeah.
And we met up with Keith Parlier. Now, Keith Parlier is as Central Florida as it gets. I mean, that guy, he's all of like, I mean, I think he's about 5'10", but I think he weighs 420 pounds and it's all in his biceps. I mean, this guy
is really strong.
Is an absolute monster. I mean, he blows my mind that this guy can lift like 300 pound gators by himself, leap tall buildings in a single bound. So we get to meet Keith. So we're in a truck. So we've got all five of us in a truck and we're driving up and down the dikes looking for gators, right? So we come upon Keith stops. We grab each other at the same time. Huge gator across the bank. Huge gator 40 yards away. Danielle,
oh,
you're up. Danielle was up. Danielle, what happened?
We grabbed the gun. I lean out the window and shoot in between the eyes. Shoot right in between the eyes. Okay, I'm aiming in between the eyes.
I'm in a very
specific
triangle.
I am shaking because I'm so excited. And on the first one to shoot, so I'm setting the standards. Like the pressure was on.
Right.
And I release. I shot. Everyone screams, "Woo! Nice shot! Got it! Woo!" We get out. We do not see a gator.
Yeah, you
so
totally
we're
missed.
In the dike. We're in the dike. Oh, not we. I mean, by we,
Keith
I mean Keith
in.
Walks into the dike. Walks in there with a gator that I possibly have shot. So there's a 50-50 chance this bugger is still alive. And he is just walking around there in his "Hey, dudes."
Yeah, just
like,
feeling
excuse
around.
Excuse me, sir.
So
who
this
are
is
you?
Exactly what you were warned about.
Yes,
right.
Yes.
Right.
And then I have a gaff, and I'm trying to use a gaff to like poke down to see if I can like touch something hard. He used a musky rod first and wasn't hooking onto anything. So I go in there with the gaff, nothing. So unfortunately, I missed the first gator, and it was a huge gator, as you guys say. And we were like, "We'll come back. This will be the last search. Maybe it floats to the top." It was 4 feet-ish deep.
Yes. And
we go around.
The fact of the matter was you shot the water right next to the gator.
Of course I did.
And but I want you to picture this. This what a badass Keith Parlier is. This guy is a badass. He walks down the dike, the side of the dike, into the gator infested water and is feeling around with his feet on the bottom of the dike for a potentially injured alligator.
Not a small one either.
I mean, can you say no thank you?
Yeah, absolutely not.
I was standing on the edge with my jaw on the ground, just like, what? Keith, stop doing that.
Was that the moment you fell in love, Ellie?
Yeah.
Yes, with her gator baby daddy.
But then we get back into the truck and realizing that I have made a horrible mistake. And we keep driving. And then on the left side, here comes another huge gator. Keith stops and just points like, that's it right there. And all of a sudden, Joel, your mouth drops. So does Keith. And then us three in the back.
Who shot on this one?
So this is Jess. Okay. Jess goes and she just relaxes and breathes through
new
everything.
New hunter Jess.
Brand new hunter. Never killed a big game animal in her life.
She's like, yes. I'm aiming for the eyeball, which, yeah,
yep,
okay.
She had the crosshairs on the eye.
I'm aiming right in the middle. Middle sucks. Don't do the middle. Just shoot the dang eye out, kid. You shoot your eye out, kid.
Are you actually pulling a line from a Christmas story and relating it to gator hunting? Perfect.
And then shoots it. And then next thing we know, we got the muskie right out. Really, we're really in a dead 11 and a half foot alligator.
Huge.
Oh my God. Reel it in like a salmon.
This
Excuse me?
What? She put the most perfect ethical shot on this alligator and just stone cold killed it. It was 11 and a half feet.
Massive.
Hundreds of pounds. 70 to 80 year old alligator.
What?
Jess,
we had to use the wrench.
Never
on the
killed
truck.
A big game
winch
animal
truck,
in her life.
Yeah, her first harvest was this year and it was a turkey. So she went from a turkey to an 11
to
and a half
dinosaur.
Foot gator.
Yes.
Yes. Oh my gosh, that was very exciting. I just about flipped the whole table.
And Joel is flipping the table, so we're done here.
And all of us, there was a moment, it was a moment where I was recording, and we're standing on the shore, the three of us with Jess, and Keith's reeling it in, and it was dead silent because we were all looking at this thing going,
yes,
I mean, we're
like
talking about within a foot
thing.
And a half or so of a state record alligator. And she's just like, and she's got a thick Wisconsin accent. And I'm thinking, she's like, so that's a pretty good one, yeah.
And Danielle and I are like, oh my God.
Oh my gosh. And I just remember Keith kind of looking back like, you just shot the gator of seven lifetimes.
So that's a nearly record-setting gator for Jessica Thielen. Wow, congrats. Worst luck for Danielle, but don't worry. If you go back and listen to that full episode from December 14th on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, or at civicmedia.us, you'll hear that she did quite well for herself, as well as our friend Ellie. We'll be right back with more of our best moments from the past few months here on Raised in Wisco. Raised in Wisco, where we've been revisiting some of our favorite moments from the past couple months. Your hosts, Joel Clayfish and Danielle Fairman, neither of which is me. I'm Jess P.S., the producer of this show. But we all wish you a very, very happy holiday season as we approach the new year. My goodness, 2025 coming at us so fast. So as any returning Raised in Wisco listener knows, our last segment of each show is dedicated to recipes and cooking because, as we all know, food is Joel's favorite dish. Now, if you ever have the chance to eat something that Joel has prepared, you take that chance because Joel Clayfish can cook a mean dish. This man knows how to take wild game and turn it into the most scrumptious food, and he's got a couple secrets. Well, maybe they're not secret anymore because he's willing to share them with us, and we're grateful for that. So in this segment, we're looking back at Joel's foolproof method for taking wild game and turning it into something mouthwatering and mouth-melting.
I'm going to tell you folks how to make my famous base recipe that everybody always loves when I make it. It's the base for my pot pies.
I feel like we need to tell everybody to stop real quick and go grab a pen and paper.
Stop what you're doing. Stop what you're doing.
Because
I'm about to ruin the image and the cooking style you're used to, okay? Yo, I look funny. No, okay, that's enough with Humpty. Listen, it's three ingredients. I've boiled it down to three ingredients. Mm-hmm. You put your wild game, you can wild game, domestic game, domestic meat, whatever you want. You put it in a crock pot or an instant pot, okay? That's a pressure cooker. You put it in, you fill it with water up to the top of whatever meat you have. If it's goose breast, if it's roast, if it's venison, you name it, antelope, fill it to the top of that. Add 1 cup of cooking oil, add 1 cup of lemon juice, and whatever seasoning is the third ingredient. Mm. Everybody, you don't need a pen for this recipe, Danielle.
You do not, but everyone always asks.
Everyone always asks. And this is so delicious, I can't even. So 1 cup of oil. What, and people are like, why would you
what
add
temperature?
Oil? Why would you
add oil? Does it matter how much meat you
it
have
It doesn't
in
matter.
There?
It doesn't
always
matter.
Always 1 cup.
1 cup. 1 cup of oil, 1 cup of lemon juice, and whatever seasoning you want. If you want to cheat, use a seasoning packet for Italian dressing seasoning. It's got all the flavors and salt in it. Mm-hmm. If you like Lowry's, use Lowry's. If you've got provider spices, use provider spices. If you are a Cavender's fan, put Cavender's in there. You name it. You put your seasoning in there with 1 cup of oil, 1 cup of lemon juice. Here's the magic to this ingredient, to this recipe, though. When it cooks, you cook it in the crock pot on high as long as it needs till the meat falls apart. You cook it in the pressure cooker. Usually I do 2 to 3 hours as long as the meat falls apart. You want that meat falling apart. That's when it's done. The beauty of a crock pot is you've got time to let that happen. And you're going to have to go way past. You'd have to cook it for 2 days before it would start to taste burnt. So don't worry about that. But when it falls apart, you take that meat out and you shred it. Because wild game particularly is very fibrous. There's no fat in it, right? Mm-hmm. It's very fibrous. So you shred it apart. You will have stuff cooking in that stock is what the juice is called after you're done cooking something, stock or broth. It'll be in the broth. You take it out and split open and be dry in the middle because it's just, it's all protein. There's no fat in it. Here's the key. Shred the ever-loving hell out of it. Shred it with 2 forks. Shred it like crazy. Shred it like you just don't care.
And then shred it like it's hot.
Put it back into the stock and stir the snot out of it. Mm. Stir it and stir it and stir it because that stock in there that's got that oil, lemon juice, and has got the seasonings will absorb into the meat, making it slippery like pulled pork, right?
Yep.
So if you want to turn it into a Mexican recipe, you add cumin. You want to turn it into, use it for the base of lasagna or something Italian, you add oregano and garlic. You want to turn it into a Greek dish, you add, you know, oregano and garlic to that and some thyme. Mm-hmm. If you want to use it for a recipe for Thanksgiving, you can add sage to it and it will taste like that. You can move that base recipe into anything you like and it is so fantastic that when everybody loves it. So I took that and I fried that in some Wisconsin butter. And just to get the shredded meat a little bit crispy on the outside, then you just take a hoagie roll and grill it, butter it and grill it, and then saute your favorite vegetables. I used red bell peppers because I think they're a little sweeter than green and onions. I used some of my favorite provider seasonings on that. And then we put Cheese Whiz on the top. But if you want to be more Wisconsin.
Cheese Whiz?
That's what actual Philly cheesesteaks are made with. Did you know that?
No, they're not.
I promise you that. Look at Taylor's nodding. You know that,
cheese
right?
Cheese Whiz? Yep.
Yeah. If you get an authentic Philly cheesesteak, it's made with cheese. Did you know that?
I did not know that. But yeah. I'll tell you that this sandwich was delicious.
Yeah. Awesome. Oh, well, so I can't good. Just do just Cheese Whiz. I'm from Wisconsin, so
yeah,
we put
say,
a little.
It tasted like there was some real cheese.
Yeah,
on
there's
there.
Real cheese on it. I had a little Cheese Whiz on it, but then we also used some natural Wisconsin provolone and mozzarella. You know, so you just stack it on your grilled bun, grilled hoagie. Add the onions and peppers. And one thing though that I will say, when you're grilling, sautéing vegetables. There's a fine point between too firm and mushy. You want to catch them while they're limp, but not soggy. Does that make sense? Soggy
kind of
vegetables.
Like the al dente for
yeah,
food.
I think that's a great example. Al dente for noodles, you want to kind of do that with your vegetables. And it turned out awesome.
Y'all, I have to tell you, I am still thinking about that Philly goose steak months later. I'm the producer of this show, Jess P.S., and it has been such a joy to revisit some of these moments. Our hosts, Joel Clayfish and Danielle Fairman, wow, they know how to put on a show and they know how to get outside in the great outdoors of Wisconsin and do the coolest stuff. So make sure you tune in every Saturday at 11 a.m. to find out what they're doing across the state of Wisconsin and truly across the world. These guys go places. We'll be back next week with new content in the new year. Ah, we will see you in the year 2025. My goodness. Have a happy, safe new year from all of us here at Raised in Wisco.